CliffCentral.com.
Yes, indeed. It is time for the Burning Platform, which is brought to you by Nando's. Every single week here on CliffCentral.com, we are joined by one or two people who have some really deep insights or some very powerful opinions to share with us. And this morning is no different. As usual, I'm joined by my my co-conspirator in the plot, Pumi Mashiko. And this morning, we also have Phumlani Majozi. So, Phumlani, it's nice to have you back on the show. Let me remind everybody who you are. Phumlani is a senior fellow at African Liberty, Africa's premier platform for advancing economic freedom and individual liberty. He's also a commentator on politics, economics, and global affairs, and you can follow him, especially if you have a good stomach. It gets quite hairy out there, but you can follow Phumlani if you'd like. If you like a bit of controversy online. I mean, Phumlani, you, not a week goes by where I don't see you fighting with some communist on Twitter. It's tough being you, man. You're a busy man, right?
You know, a friend of mine once said to me, you need to make sure that you don't ever publish your private residency address.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Always remain private, because I mean, you could get attacked. And he was right. You know, people have said nasty things before, so I'll just make sure that nobody knows. Well, I hope you guys don't see where I stay right now, so you can't track that.
there's probably some technocrat currently Googling to see what your ISP is and trying to zone in on where you are. So, all right, Pumi.
Yeah.
Pumi and I had a really interesting discussion last week with an academic called Dr. Ndabiseng Muleko, and we got into some quite interesting discussions. She's very much from the theoretical side of things. I would venture to say that your take on things is sometimes probably a little more pragmatic, because you're dealing with people who run their own little businesses. You're talking to people in the community who are dealing with actual problems on a day-to-day basis. But it's important that we also pay attention to what the universities are churning out, much as it may be theoretical, because otherwise we wouldn't have an idea of what the options out there are. Tell us a little bit, just to remind people, what African Liberty does, so that we can figure out what your theoretical platform is before we get into the practicalities of what's going on in South Africa this week.
African Liberty is a branch or a sort of a division of Students for Liberty, right? Students for Liberty is an organization that was started in America, in Washington, D.C., if I'm not mistaken, It's almost 15 years now since we started them. And the idea was that in America, there has to be some sort of a push in university campuses, a push on markets, individual freedom, free trade, all the things that characterized a free society. So that organization was started by students, and it spread out across university campuses in the U.S. And then over time, there was one guy, a great friend of mine, who is a Nigerian, Olumayo Oketiran. He sort of saw what he was a student back then, and then reached out to some of the Students for Liberty guys in the U.S., and, you know, spoke to them if he could start an Africa version of the same thing, right? Where, you know, campus students, they mobilize and they sort of, you know, push for individual freedom. He started that years back, and it also came to South Africa. We had a few guys who worked in a few campuses. One guy was at University of Pretoria, and then at one point there was one guy at UCT who was sort of mobilizing. But South Africa was even more difficult because of, you know, hostility toward the ideas of markets. And African Liberty sort of was started as something that should be a platform for people who have already left university, right? Mm-hmm. People like us, who were young professionals, who would continue to be engaged on the ideas of freedom, to research, to write on how we can make Africa sort of a pro-market and a pro-individual society. So that's what we try and do. We try and be pragmatic, but we are driven by individual freedom, right? The state can't do whatever it wants with you as an individual. Your rights, individual rights, must be respected, and, you know, must be
prioritize.
You know, if want to take a job, take it. Don't be stopped by the minimum wage. The law says,
well,
take it.
We'll talk about some of these practicalities in a moment. But Pumi, I know that you always watch. Pumi is really the biggest fan of the Zondo Commission. And it hasn't been a boring week there either. It never is. And we'll talk in a moment about some of the things that Pumlani wants to touch on, you know, the situation in Mozambique, which is concerning to all of us, the high petrol prices, which are coming up, and unemployment. We'll get to those just now. But Pums, there are some things going on in the news this week that I know you wanted to touch on. Do you want to introduce those straight away?
Dude, the Zondo Commission has degenerated. Over the past couple of weeks, it has become such a... You know, I think it's kind of like when you're at the end of a season of a TV show, mm-hmm. and you're just like, this plot, this has got to come to an end now. The plot is gone. Everything that you loved about this thing has come to an end. That's where we are with Zondo. You know, things have degenerated so much at the commission right now. Nothing is fun anymore. Nothing is. I think everything that's been
When do you think it started to go down? I mean, was this the Dalimpofu Pravin Gordhan fight?
No, I mean the Dalimpofu and Pravin Gordhan fight has been ongoing for a while, and I think anybody could see that this is how this thing is going to go and where it's going to go to. But in that moment, DCJ lost control of the room. Dali was throwing his toys, and unfortunately, you know, for Dali, is he has now become like a one-trick pony. You kind of know, oh, he's going to shout racism. Oh, that's where he's going to go with this. And his losing his temper in that way shows exactly how much out of control he had also been. Because I think for a lawyer to be that emotional about anything shows that he's no longer thinking. As we all know, when you get emotional in a situation, you stop thinking because now you've been rattled. And his cage was rattled. And then the DCJ lost control of it, you know, trying to control Dali, it's a mess. It's a mess. It's got to end now. We're done. I also think it's very sad that Cyril is now been drawn into having to come and sit here for 3 days and account for, you know, goodness knows what. It's just,
well,
it's gotta end
I mean
now.
let's just go to the ANC, because there was quite a big announcement this week. ANC Secretary General Ace Magashule on Wednesday said that the party must be given time and space to do its work, has refused to be drawn into commenting on whether he will step aside from his role in the next 30 days. But it was basically decided mm-hmm. by the ANC in the NEC meeting over the weekend that they want people who are involved in nefarious activities and people who are guilty of crimes or have been charged with crimes to step aside in the next 30 days. Do you think, either of you, Pumlani or Pumi, that anything will happen there? Do you think that this is all just grandstanding and party politics at its very worst and it will result in nothing? I mean, we know the ANC is broken and fractured. There isn't a single commentator we've had on in the past year and a half who said, oh, no, the ANC is in perfectly good condition. They'll survive this. They're going to be fine. Are we starting to see ever deeper cracks? And is this an indication of the fact that these cracks cannot be polyfilled over?
Well, let me start on that one. It is party politics. It's the factional battles of the ANC. And the big question, which you've just raised, is will he step down in these 30 days that he has given? And for me, I don't see any other option. If he were to take a route, it would be a court process, right? But we saw this week, he himself dismissed that. He said, you know, the political issues of the ANC cannot be resolved via the court, right? Because remember, the National Executive Committee is the highest decision-making of the ANC, right? Mm-hmm. So if they have issued a decision to say within 30 days, all of those, not only Ace Magashule, but all of those charged with corruption, they must step aside. He has to comply with that. Otherwise, his only option would be a court process, of which could, I don't know what to do, just invalidate the whole thing, raise whatever legal argument he could raise in the court to push back against that. But from an internal process of the ANC, the ANC has decided that this needs to be done. He can't change that that decision. It's hard for me to see him staying even more, even though the decision was issued. It's difficult. It would be something very destructive, and it would end up, and he would be suspended. And if he forces to come to office, if he comes by force, and then security would be used to push him out. So it would get more nasty. So I don't think he will. I think he will step aside if he doesn't go to court, of course.
Pums, what do you have to say about
this? Speaking of court processes, yesterday the judgment also came out about the PEC in the Free State.
Yes,
also
big story.
It's a stronghold. Big story, you know. So even the court processes are showing that where the ANC has failed to resolve internally, has failed to resolve their problems, that they've gone to court, as has happened in the Free State. The court has also then upheld that actually this PEC, which has an implication for ACE as well, because the Free State being ACE's hometown, being ACE's home province, is a very big stronghold for him. I think, so in our business, we have this thing where businesses, where we look at the DNA of a business and what happens in organizations. In old organizations, from the founders down to the people that are currently leading it. The ANC, over 100 years old, is in that same position. The DNA of the organization has replicated itself very badly. And what we see now is an executive that has veered so far away from what the founding fathers of the organization intended for this thing. And unfortunately, I mean, I've been saying for the longest time that the ANC is done. The ANC that people believed in, the ANC that was founded all those many years ago, no longer exists. The animal that we are left with now doesn't stand for the things that we always thought the ANC stood for. And this is what you're seeing, these factional fights. And the politicking and the ugliness of it is just the last of it. It's gasping for breath. It's like when an animal is gasping for breath at the end.
Now, both of you have probably got a view on this. So it's something that came up in those discussions. Magashule said he's prepared to meet with former leaders. Of course, he brought up Jacob Zuma first because he knows he'll find a warm embrace in the arms of Jacob Zuma. I mean, Jacob Zuma's really...
I don't think so.
You don't think so? Not Ace?
No.
Oh, really?
No, I don't think so.
Do you want to just give us...
But of course everybody uses Jacob Zuma, because now Jacob Zuma is seen as this person. You know, if you look at the body language of all the pictures that we've seen of people going to see Jacob Zuma over the past couple of weeks, do you see a warm and fuzzy old man welcoming home prodigal sons?
Yeah, we mustn't
I
forget. We
I
must
mean, if
forget,
you look at his body
the,
language.
These are the people who betrayed him at the end of his time. And I don't
if
think
you look
he,
at his body
forget.
Language and you look at the way that he's interacting with these guys, it's not a, you know, warm embrace.
Maybe welcoming home
the prodigal sons.
You correct me. Okay. What do you want to say, Pumlani?
I wouldn't be surprised if he head straight to Nkandla to meet Jacob Zuma. And in fact, he said he's going to meet, previous leaders of the ANC. I think Matthews Posa as well would be one of those people. I won't be surprised. I think that the Zuma thing is going to Nkandla. These politicians are manipulating us. Some of them are people who were Zuma's enemies a few years back. Julius Malema was one. He was instrumental in dislodging Zuma. Suddenly now he goes there in a weird way that seemed friendly, and people were like, is this a new alliance in South Africa's politics? So I won't be surprised if he goes there, but it would be more about symbolism, right? We've seen these guys who are sort of charged with corruption, who have the dirty names, sort of are mobilizing and coalescing together, right? Wherever there's a Zuma case, you'd see Carl Niehaus, you'd see all this Supra Mahuma Pelo, you know, all these guys, you know, Musebenzi Shwane, you see them all these guys who have dirty names. They are mobilizing as a faction in the ANC, and for some, they're in an effort to try and push back.
Well, of
against,
course, I mean,
the
no one,
faction.
No
so
one,
it's surprising. I think it's,
nobody else will have them, and the other person who'd probably join that coalition of the disaffected is probably Zandile Gumede from eThekwini, who's really, she's covered herself in glory, hasn't she? She's like one of the best examples of the worst. She's apparently been called on for removal by the ANC in KwaZulu-Natal. Sorry, the DA has called for her removal. I mean, as if the DA are going to influence anything in the ANC. but they're saying the NEC decision that all members facing corruption and other serious charges must step aside from roles, that means she's included, right? And she should probably have to go. She and 21 others face over 2,000 counts of fraud, corruption, and money laundering. She's not messing around.
And don't forget that in KZN, there is also a court judgment about the constitutional rights that that PEC also has. Because again, the PEC conference in KZN, there was a real fight and a real struggle as to who is ascending to that PEC and whether they had enough of a quorum to be voted in. All of that, you know, so the internal battles that are spilling into the outside. But I think that the really important thing is we must not be distracted. Us on the outside, the South Africans, is we mustn't get drawn into the party politics. As much as the party politics has a role to play in the bigger South African context, we actually have a much bigger problem. And our problems are economic, our problems are joblessness, you know, our problems are way bigger. And the sideshow and smoke and mirrors that keeps taking our attention away makes us stop thinking about the things that we really need to be thinking about and the problems we need to be solving, because we're so glued to the spectacle.
You see, one of the very stunning things, Gareth, is that it's the arrogance of the ANC, the disrespect of the ANC toward us as citizens. Most people disrespect us, right? They are so arrogant because they put Zandile Gumede in the legislature in KZN when there were already noises around her corruption. Right. The process was already in place. Yet still, they chose to put her in the provincial parliament. That alone tells you how arrogant and disrespectful the ANC has become. Right. And Pumi is right to speak about the fact that we are in ANC as hostage. Right. It's not only lost it in terms of reputation or public policy, which we'll get into in a few minutes. It's also lost it in terms of support, right? When you look at the ANC has been on a long-term or in a long-term decline, right? They've been declining and they will continue to decline. And of course, the worst when they decline further is that we are likely to see a coalition between them and the EFF, which sinks South Africa even further.
Well, so obviously, when someone's back is against the wall, they start to misbehave even more than usual. But I want to go back to what Pumi said just now, because I think I'm always very concerned that this show becomes one of those places where we talk about the politics because it makes us sound like we're smart and we're on top of things. But the real story, the story that affects most South Africans, is a lot simpler and doesn't have to do with party politics, doesn't have to do with factionalism, doesn't have to do with these incidents of corruption. You're quite right, Pums, and it even came up on my TV show last night when I think Howard Sackstein said, most South Africans are more concerned about the rands and cents of their own lives. And I know this is something you and Pumlani both care about. So let's go straight to that, because maybe anyone listening right now is sick of hearing about internal coalitions and factions within these parties.
All the ANC at worst.
Yeah. So let's try to talk about things that really affect people. Record high petrol prices. And this is obviously very, very bad, Pumlani. You've just written about this for the local economy. Government taxes have added to the increase in petrol prices. And for many people who think that if the government can just increase taxes, they'll be able to pay for more and will make people's lives better. Do you want to just disassemble in your own words why you think that's a bad idea?
Well, it's a bad idea because, first of all, we do know how government misspends taxpayers' money, right? We see it misspending with failing SOEs. We see it misspending in inefficient programs. We see a big chunk of it being, it's called irregular expenditure, right? We see mismanagement of taxpayers' fund within government. So for us to take that little money, right, that a person in the Soweto township, right, in Umlazi township, in, Kwamashu township, in Stenga townships where I come from, to take, a percentage of that, the money that they could spend to better their families, to take it and give it to government.
Yeah.
And at the same time, at the end of the day, the return on that is almost dismal because there's terrible roads, everything's just terrible. The healthcare is in terrible shape. The police services are terrible themselves. So, we are taking money that could be more productive by people keeping it for themselves and spending it as they see fit, and then you transfer it to bureaucrats, political bureaucrats, right, who will make decisions that aren't really going to be more effective if the money was left in the hands of those households or individuals. So that's the issue with that process, right? And with this, and you've just mentioned now about 40%. That's close to half, by the way. 40% of about 40% of this petrol price is government taxes, right? And government is taxing us in an economy that grows at, it contracted last year, but before that we're growing at less than 1%. There's no growth. You are also taxing people. You have more than 11 million people who don't have jobs, right? But then you put the additional taxes on them. Do you think their lives will progress, right, if you make it expensive for them to take a taxi from Soweto to Joburg to look for a job or to do anything? Because all these taxes will transfer into those costs, the transport costs for those people. So so it's damaging and it's not good. I think these taxes, I think they were damaging. It's something that I didn't favor in Tito Mboweni's previous budget speech. That was, highly washed. I didn't favor it, and I did, say that it's a bad idea.
You want to add anything to that, Pums?
You know my feelings about paying. this is where we miscant and say defund the bastards. But I think that, the reality of you can add more taxes, but the reality is, the money does not exist. People are not working. Therefore, they don't have the money to pay the taxes. It's just a notation that you've got that says, here we go. We're going to add another percentage to VAT. We're going to do this and that. But it really is people just are not spending less because they are saving that money or because they are keeping the money away from government. People are spending less because there is less money for them to spend.
Right.
Yeah. And I know it's counterintuitive, but what the government needs to do in this situation is they actually need to release money. They need to, in order to stimulate spending, they need to tax us less. They need to release more avenues for money. And that's what stimulus is, right, coming from the government, is tax us less, put more money into the system, spend more of what they do have. So tax us less and spend more of what they do have and not spend it on salaries, not spend it on their own salaries.
Yeah, but how are you ever going to get, how are we ever going to get the government to spend less on the bureaucracy, Pums? I mean, that's also where their political support comes from. And the unions will never allow that, and they're in bed with the unions. It's a zero
win. And that's why we love democracy, right? That's why we love democracy, because what democracy gives us is it gives us a chance every 4 years or so to change the government. It gives us a chance to change the government.
But you are the first one to say,
self-correct.
And I agree with you on this. To who? Who are we going to change the government to? It's not like we've got great options there. So, Pumlani, do you agree that, that we've got to maybe go to the polls and have an attitude to change? And if so, change to what?
Well, it's a democracy, right? And the people we have in power, the people who are mismanaging the economy, the people who have instituted what is called the Gupta network that we've seen over the past years, the people who have mismanaged education, it's people we've voted into power, right? The democracy. Therefore, we can change. We can go in the next election and choose other people. Your question is, who are those people? Well, I've been blunt about this, right? I don't do political correctness. In my view, I say it as I see it. I think the DA needs to be given an opportunity. And when I say that, I'm accused of supporting the DA, and I'm being told, well, they're racist and so on. All silly accusations, at least in my view. So the DA is a good, would be an alternative. And I think their policies are less hostile to business. For me, I want business to thrive in South Africa, right? Mm-hmm. They're less hostile to business. And in my view, they are less levels of corruption in the party compared to other parties. There's no perfect party, Gareth. You can't have a perfect politician, right? But I think relatively, I think the DA is better. So I've been blunt about that. I don't, you know, hide behind my thumb or whatever. And then there's also Herman Mashaba I've spoken about. I like him. He has an inspiring story, right? Though some people are concerned about the fallout he had with the DA. But for me, I think given the state of the country, of where we are and the ideas we need, it's the ideas that are more of Mashaba and the DA that we need in the country. This left-wing sort of socialist thinking that has existed for the past 25 years of our democracy is weakened, right? We need to weaken that. And therefore, the more voices that are pro-business and voices that can that see that we need a market-driven economy to get 11 million people unemployed back into work. So those are the ideas we need. And the strength we give to the DA and Mashab, I think, would be quite beneficial for the country.
I'm going to give Pumia right a reply because I know that she bristles. She bristles at any mention of Herman Mashaba's name. But before you say it, I don't want policies that are pro-big business. I would like to see more policies that are pro-small business. I'd like to see a government that actually frees up the economy to allow small operators to run everything from a little stall on the side of the road that sells mohodu right through to people who've got, you know, large multi-store chains all across the country or whatever it might be that people are doing to get themselves some
money. And the EFF can't do that.
No,
the EFF can't.
I don't think any political party can do that. And I think we've got to be very realistic about this. Any party that promises you they're going to give you things or they're going to create the perfect environment for you to do business in is just lying. None of them can do that. But the less government get in your way, the better things will be for people in small businesses. And I can say that to Pumi and I anyway, because we're trying to do that stuff. Now, Pums, your chance to say why you would not support Herman Mashaba.
I will do no such thing. I will not be dragged into bad mouthing other people, but I will say this, that what we need is we need ideas. We need parties that have ideas, that tell us what their ideas are so we can believe them. Unfortunately, what we do see is we see a lot of the opposition parties telling us what they hate about the ANC and what the ANC is getting wrong and mm-hmm. what the ANC should be doing better. They're not talking to us about. And part of that, I mean, there's a lot of talk about electoral reform. As you know, there was the Constitutional Court ruling about independence being able to, for South Africans being able to vote directly for an independent representative as president to the country, not just in the party system. All of those things, for me, keep telling me that what the opposition parties, unlike what Pumlani believes in, that the opposition parties are tacitly saying they cannot take on the ANC. Therefore, they must change the way the game plays.
Oh, seems we may have lost you there, Pums.
Okay, I'm here.
Okay.
Can I see other people on my screen? So on my screen right now, it's like looking at a mirror.
We can see you.
And it's crazy because I don't know if y'all are still there.
Okay, No. So every time it goes like that, I've just put you on the main screen because...
Please don't do that.
All right. Well, let's go to something else because there are also things happening. You could call it international, but it's right on our doorstep. Things that I know are of concern to all of us. We spoke about the ISIS-linked terrorists in Mozambique, and I think that it's very stupid of us if we just hide our heads in the sand and go, oh, well, it's still too far away. It's not that far away. And these people could be on our very front stoop, so to speak, in the next couple of months if we don't take care and we don't take an interest in the affairs of Mozambique. And I know that many South Africans are thinking about this, but they're not thinking about it seriously. And I doubt very much that we have a defense department that is capable of dealing with external...
Oh, but Carl Nehaus is making a special branch of the MKVA out there.
Yeah, to go to Nkandla.
Did you not see this?
To go to Nkandla to support Jacob Zuma.
To Mozambique.
Oh, really? Tell me what's happening.
Did you not see this on the news?
No. Anytime Carl Nehaus comes up on the news, I tune out. I just assume it's stupid.
What? Carl Nehaus in his phase, in his military phase, that I don't know where they belong to, he was interviewed saying he's taking a special detachment of the MKVA out into Mozambique to go deal with the situation in Mozambique.
Oh, wow.
It was on the news yesterday.
Okay, this is news to me. So in many ways, I'm surprised. So tell me quickly, what do you think of this, Pumlani? Do you think that if we did have a major problem and if we did decide to take action, we even have a military that is capable of doing anything to stem the tide?
Well, you know, I don't have faith in our state security. And the reason for that is it's already failing to protect us as local citizens. Like, when you see the levels of crime in the country, the levels of murder, you know, people being murdered per day, we have at least 58 murders per day in South Africa, right? We rank in the top 10 in homicide rates globally, right? So it's a very scary country. So we have a security system that fails to protect citizens. So now, suppose now we find ourselves in a terrorist kind of battle or fight, and we know these terrorists, they have nothing to lose, right? They sacrifice their lives, you know, for their cause. Mm. So faith in our security system, I doubt would manage it. In fact, we already hear some stories that there are people within South Africa that are somehow linked to that group, right, to terrorists, or sympathizers, right? So, I mean, that's a big problem right there. And we don't see a campaign to root that out. We are not seeing it, which is a failure already. And my view, Gareth, is that with respect to what's happening in Mozambique, we have two options, right? One of them is to, right now, as some people say, to send troops to dismantle or crush the insurgency, right? And people say that the security experts say that you should do that as early as possible, because over time these insurgents will grow and will affect South Africa. But then that option, we must know that there will be reprisals, right? These people are going to retaliate at some point, right? So it puts us in danger. And then the other option is to say, this is a Mozambican problem. Let the Mozambican government deal with it. We will strengthen. We will, you know, reinforce our security here at home, right? So that's one. Or some people say, do it both. But my view is that going in there right now, and in an area that is, Cabo Delgado is in the north. It's not even in our borders right now. So for now, maybe let's focus on strengthening our security and making sure that our people who are there, they are safe, and we bring them back home.
And we know we have the most porous borders. I just want to clear up, because I know Pumi's reputation is more important on this show than mine. It's worth saying that the Carl Nehaus story is bullshit. It's obviously fake news. It's an April Fool's thing, clearly, because the graphic that has been going around on social media is meant to be ENCA, but it says EANC, MKVA, Special Ops Team to Tackle Mozambique Rebels. So clearly, they are mocking Carl Nehaus as well. So there we go.
Gareth, you could have let me ride with this. You could have let me ride with this. People would be on, like, social media looking it up now. Now look at you.
Sorry, Pums. I'm more concerned with your reputation than you are this morning, clearly. All right, so guys,
Can I just say, Gareth, do you remember a couple of months ago when we were speaking with Jean-Jacques Cornish about this?
Mm.
And And we did raise it, and I said to you guys that the problem with having so close to our borders and not having, and this is again the hollowing out of the state institution of South Africa that's happened over the past couple of years, is we no longer have the capacity. A, we don't have the standing anymore with even within the continent to be able to pull some muscle that says something needs to be done over here. But also we don't have the capacity internally. Our DERCO is useless. Who's that? Nkwane Maite Mashabane.
Yes.
Is that the current?
I don't think she's a DERCO anymore.
No, it's not. It's Naledi Pando.
Naledi's in charge of
It's Naledi Pando now. But but all of that, right? We have nobody there who is able to make a case, not just for South Africa, but for Mozambique too, because it doesn't have to be South Africa sending troops out there. There are global systems that can be called on. But who is there to make those calls? Who is there to pick up the phone and have a conversation at the UN level, at the AU level for these things to happen? And for South Africans, this is another situation we're going to find ourselves in, very similar to the quiet diplomacy we are let slide in Zimbabwe. And look where that has landed South Africa, right? Because if our neighbors fail, it has a direct impact.
That's true. It's a big security threat, Gareth, for South Africa. And I think right now it's the most important foreign policy issue that we'll need to deal with as a country over the next, 2 years.
So
it's a very big one.
Let's just turn our attention even further afield. I mean, it is clear to anyone, even the most casual observer, that President Joe Biden of the United States is an addled old dementia patient. And there's no two ways about it. His press conference last week was an embarrassment. He was reading notes. He didn't even know where in his notes he was. There were prepared questions for prepared members of the very friendly press. He stumbled and bumbled and mumbled. He lost his way. He started talking nonsense. He didn't even make a good impression on the things that he had prepared notes for. Do you think that very, very old people should not be allowed to run for office? I mean, it's a problem not only in America, it's a problem here in Africa too. We've got some very old people in power, and some of them are just hanging on for dear life and for life.
Pumi, you take that one.
Look, guys, America is very similar. The analogy between America and the ANC for me is quite amazing, because America is also in that situation where it's slowly disintegrating. The DNA of the country, it's losing its standing in the world, and it says a lot if the best politicians that they had, the best person they had for the job against Donald Trump was Joe Biden. Mm-hmm. And looking at the number of people that turned out to vote for Donald on the one side, who a lot of people see him as a wrecking ball, and on the other side to vote for Joe Biden, it is that the giant is falling. The American giant is also falling, and it's the big, I think it's the end of an empire that we're seeing, and it's just a slippery slide now. Just a slippery slide. Just one more. Yeah. It's very close to the AC.
Yeah, it's interesting what you mentioned, Gareth. The you say we see this even in Africa, where we have Africa is the youngest continent region in the world, and you have but the average age of leaders who, in many occasions, have stayed for three decades in power. Right. So, I mean, there is always this mismatch, and we have very old people running the countries and the regions, the people are young themselves. Should we put some limitations on should we have, say, maybe if you are more than 60, you can't run or you can't be the president of the country? I think that would that would work, actually. It's the first time.
No, you can't put limitations. People must vote differently. There are two things. People must vote differently if that's how they feel. Mm-hmm. But secondly, then there must be people willing to stand for election. If young people are not standing for election, if young people are not there to be voted for to begin with, that's not how democracy works, unfortunately, putting an age limit.
Well, every democracy has its rules and limitations, whatever you can call it. There are rules in a democracy. Mm. And the question is, if we have a rule that says if you are more than 60, it's best you just retire, and then youngish people, they run the country and move the country forward. You're going to have a situation like what the Joe Biden situation that we are facing right now in the U.S. and in Africa. Officials, what Garrett
young
said.
People, so, I mean, young people cannot wait to be given opportunities. If you want an opportunity, you stand up and you take it. Unfortunately, what we do have here in South Africa and in Africa in general is young people are uninterested. Young people don't show up. Young people are not there to be voted for.
Yeah, disengaged from politics for all the reasons
they have to show up.
That we've already
discussed.
Nobody's
going to give you the space.
No, that's exactly right. But I do think that is also, as much as it's the fault of very old people who are running for office, and I do think you have to have the wherewithal to be able to know that at 75, I mean, sure, at 60 you've still got energy, you know. At 75.
75. I wouldn't trust
a 75-year-old with the, you know what a stressful job it is to be president. And Joe Biden is 2 years shy of 80. It's a very stressful job. So even if you're in great health, even if you're in perfect order and you've got enormous amounts of energy, there's just no way that you can maintain yourself in a role that is that complicated and that stressful.
Being the U.S. president, Garrett, being the U.S. president, that's something else. For someone as old as Biden and his sort of health issues he's already facing right now. So, I mean...
And yet, millions and millions of people went out and voted for him. It wasn't a surprise. Wasn't a surprise that the man is that old. And yet they showed up and voted for him.
Well, that just shows you how desperate those people, we've often discussed how they were more anti-Trump voters than they were pro-Biden voters. I mean, there's no way he's more popular there's no way he's more popular than Barack Obama was. He had an absolute whitewash of Obama's best results because people were just so anti-Trump.
Yeah, and also just one thing to mention that you had big numbers of people who voted for him. You know, just because you had big numbers of people who voted for him, millions and millions. It doesn't make it the right decision. Those people, I don't think they thought things through properly. You know, that's how America was founded on the basis that this thing of majority rule.
The winner takes all.
Exactly, as weak as possible. And the founders there were smart because they did foresee that the majority can just make stupid, irresponsible decisions in many, many forms.
Majority,
and I think it was
the majority. Usually,
and yet
do.
This is the democracy we have.
Yeah,
this is the democracy we have. It's a flawed system, but it's
exactly.
You know?
I like the word flawed. Actually, I think
I'm often reminded when it comes to popularity and to majority rule and people who say, "Oh well, if you know 9 out of 10 people like something, it must be a good thing." You've got to remember that back in the 1940s, Hitler received more fan mail than the Beatles did in the 1960s put together. You know, the Beatles and the Rolling Stones, all of them individually and together. Yeah, you know, that doesn't mean that Hitler was a good guy just because a bunch of people thought he was cool back in the 1930s. Let's not be stupid about this.
And it doesn't mean that people made the right decision, as if somehow we should attach this sensibility towards that decision that they chose Hitler. No, it was a stupid decision they made.
No, they made the right decision for themselves. They made the right decisions for themselves and what they wanted at the time. It's the right decision for them.
Mm.
I think, you know...
Right stupid decision for themselves.
It was the right decision for them.
Yeah. I'm a freedom
it
guy.
It worked for them.
We have a right to be stupid, but we must call you out.
So, all right, let's just talk about one quick thing because we don't have a lot of time left and I do want to address this. So borders, we just talked about our borders with Mozambique and how porous they are. So Joe Biden's biggest threat at the moment is his southern border. People are streaming across there. There's a humanitarian crisis unfolding. You remember how people like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez were doing photo ops at what was expected to be the border but turned out to be a parking lot, where she was crying about all these poor immigrant children who had nowhere to live. We've got a real situation there because criminal gangs are being paid lots of money by desperate immigrants who want to get into the United States, and they are sending children across the border. It's created an enormous problem for the Biden administration because they have nowhere to house these kids. Kids are often unaccompanied. If they are accompanied, we're not even sure if they're accompanied by their parents. Sometimes they're ferried across by these criminal gangs, and there's nowhere to put them. So they've got these child sort of care centers that's being run by the Department of Homeland Security. These places are, there's no social distancing in them. They're sleeping under foil blankets. It looks really bad. But when Trump was president, they called this kids in cages and made a huge fuss of it. Now, of course, it's just, you know, accommodation for children. Something like 700 kids are put in a space that's meant to accommodate 100 kids. It's a real problem.
Humanitarian crisis.
Mm-hmm. That's what they're calling it. And in American terms, it probably is. You know, anytime you see children on their own in these kinds of conditions, if your heart doesn't go out to them, then you just don't have a heart.
No, you don't have a heart. But I'm just, it's interesting that you've mentioned how different the media has sort of analyzed or described the situation, how different it is out from what they did to Trump. Was Trump also faced a similar problem, and he was accused of putting together cages, putting kids in cages, of which, by the way, those facilities were started by Barack Obama, started those facilities, right? It wasn't Trump who started those. So it's been these facilities have been a democratic idea, right? Because Obama started them. But there is the way the media has sort of been soft toward Joe Biden on the issue. And you know, apparently they've even, Biden's administration has been reluctant to give access to journalists to many of these facilities, right? They've been blocking access, and people have been asking, what are you hiding? Why can't we see what's going on there? So there have been limitations around the issue. And, you know, the media has been soft. It shows how biased the mainstream media is in the U.S. And a Washington-based friend of mine, who is a Republican, has called it it's a democratic propaganda machine. The media, it's always.
Well, what about? I mean, what about the issue of the fact that most of the reason that these people are crossing the border now in these numbers is because Joe Biden seems to be much more pro-immigration than Donald Trump was. He said, if you come across the border, we will deport you. Stay in the country that you're in. And if you have a legitimate reason to be coming into the United States and you've gone through the process of trying to legally immigrate into America, we will accept you. But otherwise, you are not welcome. He was building walls. He was talking tough. And it seems to have worked. The Biden government has not talked tough, and now they are reaping this whirlwind. You've got to be careful what you say, right? There's a price for what you say. And in South Africa, we've had some horrible things being said. Let's just bring it home for a second. We've had some very xenophobic things being said, among them by Herman Mashaba, who we've discussed earlier in the show, among them by King Goodwill Zwelithini, who died just a couple of weeks ago. These are people who've said horrible things about immigrants. And yet in South Africa, there are still people willing to risk their lives to cross the Limpopo and its crocodile-infested waters and get here because there's more opportunity here than there is in neighboring countries. This is
Gareth, and that's the thing.
We have to consider.
You know, we tend to look at immigration worldwide in an insular way. We look at it from the inside looking out. But what it really is about is really a failing in many, many different countries around the world of economics. Mm. In South America, we all know, right? Mm. What are the biggest industries coming out of South America between the drugs and like some farming. And in fact, it's more profitable to be in drugs than it is to be in any other kind of industry.
Yeah.
And the drug cartels run those countries. It's an economic failing. And what the economic failing has created is it's created this huge number of people who are essentially economic refugees all over the world. And they tend to go to the closest place that has some kind of opportunity that they can see, an opportunity to survive, an opportunity to earn, an opportunity to thrive, as it were. That's what you're seeing. But when we look at it from the inside, looking out, we're kind of going, all these people trying to get into our country.
Yeah, but it's because Zimbabwe was managed into the ground. And there are, you know, there are less immigrants. It's quite obvious. There are less people who are trying to get into South Africa from, let's say, Botswana or Namibia, which are run reasonably well, than there are people who are trying to get in from Zimbabwe or Mozambique, which are run very, very badly.
And Lesotho.
So then,
and Lesotho.
Yeah. So then what that tells you is that the leadership in those countries, not only in Africa,
and their policies, Pumlani, and their policies.
I was about to go there. Public policy, economic policy. Because we were talking about the bad economics for me, but the bad economics didn't just become bad economics itself, right? It was bad economic policy that killed opportunity, killed economic productivity in those countries, killed wealth creation. As a result, people, they are flocking into neighboring countries that are better than theirs. Because the failure of leadership, then, you know, economics.
Well, listen, I'm afraid we're out of time, guys, but thank you both for your input today. The Burning Platform is brought to you every week by Nando's. We check in on all the important things in current affairs and the news and the stories that affect you and I. And I hope that we aren't getting to the point where you think that we're just talking about politics instead of talking about real people's lives and the differences that good or bad leadership can make. But I think this morning we've really traversed the entire spectrum of those conversations. However, if you have suggestions on what you'd like us to tackle next, if there is a particular guest that you'd like us to have, please let us know. Just email me, gareth@cliffcentral.com. And don't forget over this long weekend to go and get some nice food from Nando's, because they really are the best in South Africa. They're a tremendous export. They're a very big success story in our story. And we need to support all of those people. Imagine if you've been running a little restaurant through lockdown, how difficult that's been. Go out there and support these guys. And also support any other small businesses that you see, because we do need to get our local economy up and running again. There are just not enough jobs. There are just not enough people employing South Africans and people from all over the rest of this continent, frankly. We need to get out there and make a difference. Make that your job over the Easter weekend. Happy Easter, everybody. Pumlani, thank you so much. Pumi Mashiko, thank you so much. We will catch up with you guys soon. Have an awesome day.
Thank you.
Thank you, Pumlani. Thank you, Pumi. And we will see you on Tuesday. Monday's a holiday. Tomorrow's a holiday. Have a very good long weekend, everyone. We'll see you on Monday. Tuesday. I just said it and then I forgot myself. Cheers. CliffCentral.com